Accession number 23213, Reel 15.
Major Potts, Reel 15. You were saying that you met lots of game while you were doing that.
Yeah, and I said rhino and what have you, elephant and everything else. And then we, after that, we did a bit of patrolling.
What about
Mau Mau
on that sweep?
We caught no Mau Mau at all, I might
do
add.
Do you think there were any in there?
I think there might have been, but it was only too easy for them to go up various streams which we weren't going down. We only had to cover about a mile a day coming down. But I think we had a 4 mile front, so they could easily have doubled back.
Is that 4 miles for the company?
For the company, yeah.
That would really get the company well strung out.
Oh, it was really the end after that sweep, and with Operation Anvil in Nairobi, was really towards the end of Mau Mau. They realized they were beaten, and it was only the hardcore gangs which were left up on the mountain, and these were wheedled out by super, you know, pseudo gangs and things. And at that time, I went home.
Now, you were saying that they weren't active trying to get food, and presumably they were trying to recruit in the plantations around Wega. Apart from this grand sweep operation, what other sorts of things were you doing at Wega?
Well, we had to guard the airfield, which was obviously a very important strategic position, because all these aircraft were there. If they burnt any of those, they would have interfered with resupply. Also, around Wega itself, there were quite a lot of Europeans, retired people. So we went round and saw them. They were all right. It was a very pleasant area of Kenya, and I think we relaxed quite a lot then. We didn't have a lot on.
Did you have any contacts?
I really can't remember. Not very much. Things were running down, if you know what I mean. And anyway, I was suddenly told, you've been abroad too long. The advance party of the Inner Skellings are off to England, and you're on the advance party.
You were on the advance party on the way out, weren't you?
Yeah. And I was on the advance party on the way home.
But you, presumably you hadn't seen anything much of the Inner Skellings while you'd been...
Oh, I went to a couple of funerals, and I had visited them a couple of times. You didn't get time to travel long distances. I mean, it could take you 2 days to get from Nairobi to Nyeri if the rainy season was on. I mean, if you're at the bottom of Poli Poli Hill, Poli Poli in Swahili means slowly, slowly, and it was muddy, you just had to wait until the mud dried out. So I think that was the end of my time in Kenya, and I flew home.
Again, looking back on Kenya, you said that there were some things you'd learned in Malaya.
Yeah. Well, I always have thought that you must have, and never actually had to put it into practice since, that you must always have a very heavy or a pretty good machine gun up front within the first two people, because if you're operating in jungle, forest, or close country, your first shots are going to count. And if you can get 20 officers against two, you're going to make a much more, or you're going to make a bit of a hole in the enemy. I think a lot of people feel that, you know, you should have a rifleman and a scout and all this sort of thing. I think the patrol commander must be either the second man or the third at the very least, because the decision is there. Do we do it now or do we do it next week? And if you do it next week, you won't get there. That is how I looked at it.
We won't have quick reactions.
Yeah.
We won't have heavy firepower as far forward as possible.
That's right, yeah. I've always fought this. You've always got... It's no good having a whole lot of people at the back who've got the LMGs. I think I spoke in my earlier one about your soldiers, especially the European soldiers, about butterflies, birds. Didn't I mention that?
Yeah,
yeah. Well, that was no good with the Africans, because they're not interested anyway. But Africans were very good, because they could always tell you when game was about. They could always tell you if they thought there was Mau Mau. If there was, I mean, we had one case, I wasn't there, where a patrol was settling down for the night. And three Mau Mau came down the track and thought the Africans were Mau Mau, other Mau Mau. And so they waved to them. And the Mau Mau waved to them. Then one of my Africans, well, I wasn't there, so I fired and shot one. The other two ran right the way through the camp with Africans banging at them, askaris. And there was a waterfall at the end of the camp, where they were for the night, and the platoon commander was sitting washing his feet, and this Mau Mau, one went right up the hill, one went left and went straight over the waterfall and killed himself in the waterfall. So he got two for the price of one.
The third one got away,
you know, and luckily no one was shot, because there were shots going everywhere. When I got back to England, I went on leave, and it had been decreed that I should not go overseas for some time, because I'd been more or less continuously overseas since 1948, and here it was 1955. So I was sent on an anti-tank course to Neverhaven, and when I got there, I was taught on one of the first courses on the Wombat. Of course, we were going as demonstration battalion to the School of Infantry. And I went to see my CO and I said, but we have to fire 17-pounders at Warminster as well as the Wombat. But there was nobody to teach us how to fire the 17-pounder or anything about it. And I mean, it's quite a large 3-ton piece of equipment. We also had 14 carriers. We have one corporal who was trained in carriers. So we had 12 anti-tank guns, 14 carriers, all the equipment, and I think I had 28 men. Who talk about never having enough men in 1999 to 2002? This was 1955. Anyway, I was anti-tank platoon commander for about a year, which was great fun, and I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I had some super NCOs. Then I went as a 2IC of a rifle company, and then back to be 2IC of support company. And I thoroughly enjoyed Warminster for 2.5 years, or was it two? I can't remember. We had good sport. There was shooting, and in fact, we had a very, very good time. I did actually, while we were there too, I was told by my CO, Field Marshal Templar, had rung up and said, oh, Potts is there, is he? He's a tracker. He's got to go to Barnard Castle to train 24 Mobile Brigade, which was the Air Mobile Brigade in those days. So there were two or three of us, and we assembled at Barnet Castle for a couple of weeks to train the Air Portable Brigade in tracking. Tracking in Barnet Castle is different to anywhere else in the world. We did it in a place, I think it was called the Hammersley Forest. But we did our best. We made a lot of them learn how to eat Irish stew, cold Irish stew and compo without a fire. And it was quite fun. But I mean, it was, I wouldn't have called it, we taught them any tracking.
Sounds more like a field craft course.
Well, it was some idea that the Ministry of Defence had. And we were to put it into operation.
What sort of things were you doing in support of the School of Infantry?
Well, we did all their demonstrations, provided their troops, provided the transport was ours. The soldiers got very fed up with it. Our disciplinary record was appalling.
Why was that?
Well, I think it was because they were mucked about. You know, they were being mucked about. They had officers from here, there, and everywhere, and we had lots of absence. We had a few. We had national service, of course, not from Ireland, but they were from London, and we also, usual sort of things which happen in garrison towns, except Paddy got a bit drunker than most, and were caught every sort of Saturday night swinging from lampposts in Warminster. But we enjoyed Warminster, and the only person who didn't enjoy us was the Brigadier, who was forever chastising us.
Were there any significant changes in the tactics that you were demonstrating?
No, we hadn't arrived at that yet. We hadn't even got on to nuclear, really. We were a bit split up because we had to have one platoon at Eton Hall, which was the officer cadet school at Chester, and we had to have a platoon, a section from each type of support weapons, was at Never-Avon. Our second battalion was disbanded at this time, which was we got quite a lot of surplus soldiers from that, but it was also the time when numbers went down in the army. There were talks of big redundancies being coming along. There was the talk of a lot of regiments being amalgamated, such as the Devon and Dorsets, the Gloucesters and the Berkshires. No, it wasn't the Gloucesters and the Berkshires, was it? The Berkshires and the Wiltshires, and other regiments.
Did that have a really significant effect at the time?
It did, yeah. There was an uncertainty in the army. At least we were stable for 2 years. And it was the first time the battalion had been really stable. Well, I mean, it was for years and years and years. And we had 2 years where we got all our families together, and we were pretty happy one way and another.
Were you aware of the political background of these cuts? Because this, I think, was the time of the Sands cuts.
I suppose we were. We realised that, Germany was the thing. We were in England. We were demonstration battalion. We'd gone chasing around the world, and here we were back in England, and we didn't. I don't think we paid too much. I don't think the troops did. Don't think I did really, until about September '57, when they said we're off to Berlin. Whoopee, says the whole battalion, off to Berlin.
What's the effect from going to Berlin?
Well, you know, nightlife, and this is what they thought. And I was sent for the CA said, "Oh, Gordon," he said, "I got a little job for you for the move to Berlin." I went, "Oh, baggage officer, I'll bet." It was baggage. It was all the families. I had to get every family documented, and we were taking about 160 wives, a lot of them Irish, never been out of England or Ireland. And of course, they have to go through up to Berlin, up the corridor, and their documentation had to be absolutely perfect. If the dot was in the wrong, if they didn't know where they came from, that was right. And seeing we had wives from Malaya, we had wives from the West Indies, we had some, a wife or two from Burma, India, and you know, I got them all to Berlin by one officer's wife, and she came from Alexandria.
What happened to her then?
Well, she followed on later.
She got there
eventually. Yeah. I was quite pleased with that.
How did you do all that? Were you having to liaise with the
Foreign Office? Everybody. It was a nightmare. I had a corporal, very good corporal, Clark, and myself, and we had about a month. And we worked day and night. But we got them there, and I was terribly pleased because I thought the CEO was going to say, you made a nonsense of that one. So,
your soldiers, did you have many soldiers in the battalion who came from the Irish Republic?
Lots.
Did that create complications?
Not really, unless they couldn't find their wretched birth certificates. And that happened. And a lot of them, you'd be surprised, when we got to Berlin, we had one wife who refused to go to the NAFI for shop. The simple reason, she'd never had frozen food before, and she wouldn't eat foods that had been frozen. Can you imagine it? Mind you, this was the late 60s.
Yes.
But we got them to Berlin, and there we were. We were quite happy. But then everybody found out when you get... I, by that time, had gone back to support company as 2IC. And the number of duties that one had to carry out in Berlin was nobody's business. We were there for 14 months. And we had Sennelager, Spandau Guard, train guards, border guards, you name it. We had to do it. Two men here, three men there. We got out to the zone once a year for 2 weeks for training. And we all went down on one train and then came back 2 weeks later on the train. The vehicles went under the... I can't remember how they went. They either went by train or drove. And support company went to Putlos on the Baltic. For another 2 weeks, so I was lucky. I had 4 weeks out of Berlin, and then there was an officer every night, had to be train officer, go down, see the Russians. But the biggest thing in Berlin that you had to practice for was the Queen's birthday parade. Well, it was quite good because, the Berlin Wall had not been built. You could go into the Russian zone, into the Russian part of Berlin, and the big, anybody came to visit you, you took them to the Russian War Memorial, which was a huge place with, 5 graves with about 10,000 in each grave or whatever. It was quite forbidding, but it was... you had to follow a set route to go there, and you had to follow a set route to go back, or come back. Berlin at that time had not been rebuilt very much, or not very much of it. It was a pretty desolate sort of area. You could go to the opera in the east. My wife went. I never went because I'm not cultured. But it was done very well for about £2. You could go to a very good opera, and you'd get champagne thrown in. A lot of people did that sort of thing. There was plenty of sport, and the soldiers loved it, and we had no trouble at all.
Did the nightlife live up to their expectations?
I think it did. They were glad to get away from Warminster, and they were under their own officers, and we had no problems whatsoever. Oh, the odd, thing, but nothing very much.
What impression did you get of the Russians when you had your dealings
with them? Well, we didn't have very much, but the Russians were... I suppose you'd call them autonomous or whatever. Yeah, but for instance, we did have a cocktail party and we asked the Russian army. We thought we'd ask the Russian army, and everybody said they won't come. They never replied to the invitation. 5 minutes before the beating retreat started, five or six of these huge, whatever cars they are, arrived and outstepped all these Russians and their ladies. Could we get rid of them? They were there 4 hours later, sloshing back the whiskey as hard as they could. But there was no reciprocal thing happened at all. We got on quite well with the Americans. We quite liked the French. And quite a lot of our soldiers liked the German girls, and that was it.
Was there a plan of what to do in the event?
Oh, yes, there was a plan of... we had our defence stations. I think I actually had to go on a course before I went to Berlin, learn how to blow up bridges. One of my jobs was to blow up all the bridges over the Havel. I can't really remember. I think there was all this explosive for blowing them up.
Sounds more like an engineer task.
Well, it was, yeah, but there weren't enough engineers. There was only a half squadron in Berlin. If anything had happened, we'd all been in the bag. On our way to Siberia.
And was the idea that you would try and defend your half of the city and stay in place, or were you going to try and...
Oh, I don't know. I was not privy to at that stage. In my lowly position as a company 2 IC...
You were just
going
to blow the bridges then?
I was going to blow the bridges, if I'd ever been told to. We couldn't have defended it. There was no way. I mean, it was 100 miles down to the nearest checkpoint. We would never have got that far. It just wasn't on.
What was your accommodation like in
Berlin? They were old army. It was the old German army barracks we were in. Very good. We had two companies at three companies in Brook Barracks, Spandau, and one at the air base, one of the air bases at Gatow. And it was very good compared with a lot of the accommodation in England. And of course, it was all heated, very well heated. And married quarters were very good, generally much better than the ones in England. And in fact, it was a very good posting. So we did 14 months in Berlin, but I think 14 months was about right. Maybe a little bit too long. It seems to go in a yearly cycles. From there, Wuppertal. Wuppertal is a typical industrial town in the Ruhr. Difficult to get anywhere because they all the towns, You ran one into the other. Our brigade headquarters was up at, somewhere to the north. We did masses of exercises, mostly radio exercises, which ended up with all the officers, captain and above, were away all the time in jeeps and on, ops. With our soldiers, looked after by the platoon commanders, because we only did 2 or 3 big exercises in the year we were at Wuppertal.
What sort of form did those exercises take?
Well, we had one down in the Harz Mountains, which was quite good fun. Individual training and company training. I really can't think. We used to do local exercises around the Wuppertal area. We also had a number of garrison duties to carry out.
Were these field exercises in the form of mobile defence or static defence, or do you remember what sort of manoeuvres you were practicing?
I don't really. I often thought we were too unimagined. I thought we were unimaginative in a lot of our exercises. I still believe, or I believed in those days, that one shouldn't have a static front line. We should have killer areas for killing tanks with just a few people. Shoot and scoot and scoot and shoot. But the hierarchy didn't agree.
How did you get on with the Germans in the Wuppertal area?
They had very little contact. I say that the only people who had contact with them at all were the soldiers, and a lot of those were with prostitutes and things like that, or in the bars. We didn't go out at night. We made our own amusement in the camps. We didn't have the money in those days like people do today. I don't think there was very much fraternizing. I don't think the Germans liked us very much. I'm pretty certain that they didn't.
Were they less friendly than they'd been in Berlin?
Yeah, because Berlin, they were quite friendly in Berlin because they realized that we were, might have been occupying, but we were keeping the Russians out. Whereas down in the zone, they were making money, and they were making lots of money in those days. And I don't think they liked us. I can't think that I ever asked any German to my house. Admittedly, one didn't have, as I say again, our pay and our money was not good in those days. You know, this was late 1959. And there it is. And I just have a look, but I can't think of anything else that we really did. It seemed that we were always separated because we were always on these wireless exercises all over Germany.
Did the wirelesses improve? Because you've been saying earlier that the wirelesses didn't work.
Wirelesses, in my opinion, army wirelesses have been appalling and were appalling until pretty near when I left the service. They were appalling there. Our wirelesses were not good when I was with the Marines. They were appalling, well, not very good anyway, in Cyprus, because they never got, you could never get through. And I even understand today there are problems with the wirelesses. You might as well take your mobile telephone today. You'd be better off, so I'm told. The other thing is, since you mentioned boots, army boots have never been good. Why did our soldiers in 1982 in the Falklands take the boots off the Argentinians? Because they kept out the water and they kept your feet warm. And I'm told that even the latest boots are not very good. And if you ask any Marine, they go downtown and pay 130 quid for a pair of boots in the sports shops. Well, that's an awful indictment, really. Of British equipment. You buy Soldier magazine and look at the equipment that's for sale there. Why is it in Soldier magazine? Because they know that what the soldier is getting, and I'm not a Bolshevik person on this, but I do believe it is appalling, a lot of the equipment we have.
How was it that you became attached to the Marines?
All a bit mumbo jumbo, really. I was waiting to see what you were going to ask. I decided in Wuppertal that it was time. I'd been 4 years a company 2IC or a platoon commander, and it was time for me to go. Well, I think you can go too long regimental soldiering. You know, they all know you, and there it is. So I thought, well, I better go away, and I didn't want to go on the staff. I'd taken my captain to major promotion staff college exam in Berlin, and I had passed it, not to go to the staff college because I only got 49%, so I couldn't go to the staff college. I could have sat it again, but I decided that being a lazy sort of person, that perhaps that was quite enough to get promoted to major. So I looked through the lists. They used to have lists in those days of what people could do. And I thought I'd rather like to be a.